A warm welcome to our English translation of the sermon today. We are experimenting with a few ways of translating our sermon into English, and this one is of no means perfect because I'm not a native English speaker, but there wasn't another good option here. So that's what we are trying for today as we start in a new preaching series about Jacob. And Jacob is a very interesting person because he's one of the great men of Israel. He's one of the old founding fathers, you could say, one of the national heroes. We in Switzerland, we have a national hero called Wilhelm Tell. And he freed Switzerland from an oppressive king. But there are great differences between our national hero stories and the story of Jacob. Because even though Jacob is one of the founding fathers of the nation of Israel, he is by no means a hero without mistakes. He's a man with lots of deficiencies. He's a man that has had to fight and to wrestle with things that we are still wrestling with today. And so as we follow this figure, we're going to see many, many themes and many interesting aspects of his life that are of significance for us in a very, very special way. And that's why we are looking into Jacob's life in this sermon and in this sermon series. And we're going to start in Genesis chapter 25, so the first book of the Bible in chapter 25. It's from verse 21, the following. You are having it on your paper, I believe. And we are reading there in God's word, Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, "If this is thus, why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. She's asking herself, "God has given me this gift of children, but why am I having problems right now if it is a gift that I've received from God? Why is there suddenly so much struggle and so many difficulties, even though this is coming from the Lord?" That's a question that we are asking ourselves sometimes too, I guess. So her children are causing her some headache or stomach ache, or how do you ever call that? Anyway, she went to ask the Lord. And the Lord said, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger." Okay, there is conflict on the horizon. As the story will develop, we will see that most probably. And it's probably important to say, God didn't say this is good that it is this way. He just said, this is how it's gonna happen. Okay, it's like descriptive, not he's not judging if this is good or bad. Then we read, "When her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak. So they called his name Esau." This means hairy one. "Afterwards, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob." Jacob means holding a heel or deceiver. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. These two figures, Esau and Jacob, are the main protagonists of our story of today. They couldn't have been more different. It says, "When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents." So Esau, he was wild. He was roaming around outside, and we have reasons to believe that he wasn't necessarily someone that would like contribute to his family or to the things that needed to be done. And Jacob, he was called a quiet man. The word quiet can also be translated to blameless or righteous. So he was a very responsible, sincere, truthful man. We know of this translation because in Job chapter 1, Job is also described as someone with this character trait, and there it's a blameless or righteous, and the righteous translation. So we see Jacob, he was a quite different man than Esau. They were very different, these two. Nevertheless, Isaac, the father, he loved Esau. It's written, Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game. But Rebekah loved Jacob. So what's happening is the parents, they have their favorite, which isn't necessarily a good thing, I guess. And as the story unfolds, we see that this is not the most best thing a parent can do with his children. But I'm no one that can talk much about that. So we just take that the Bible describes it like this, and we'll see what's happening. Now the story starts to unfold. Once Jacob was cooking stew. Now action is taking place. Esau came in from the field. He was exhausted. He has been hunting probably for days, and maybe he didn't get anything, and he was coming home probably very tired, very exhausted. And when you're exhausted, it's always difficult because you're probably not able to make good decisions when you're exhausted. And so that's what we're going to see here as well. So Esau said to Jacob, let me eat some of the red stew, or red stuff. It's in Hebrew, it's just called red. Let me eat some of the red, for I'm exhausted. He's literally saying, let me gulp down from this red. And therefore his name was called Edom. Edom means red in Hebrew. I don't know why they are calling him red. Maybe it became a running gag, or maybe they were mocking him. But anyway, Esau, he wants to eat, and that's the only thing that is of interest right now for him. And Jacob said, sell me your birthright now. He said, give me the right to be the firstborn. And when you have the right to be the firstborn, that means that you're gonna get twice as much from your parent than all your other siblings get. So it's the right to inherit more than the others, and that has to do that you get like the family trade or the land that comes with what your family is doing. And also there is a spiritual and other dimension to it. You get more than your siblings when you are the firstborn. But at that moment, Esau doesn't care at all because he's very hungry. And he said, I am about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me? We have to note here that Jacob is quite mean when he asks for the birthright in that situation. But Esau is quite foolish to just say, oh, I'm dying anyway, because he isn't dying right now. There are other tents around. He can go to his parents. They're still alive. Someone will give him food. So that there is no point in thinking about that at that moment, and just giving away his birthright just because he wants something on his plate. So it won't be one of his best decisions, I guess, when he's looking back on his life once. But anyway, Jacob said, swear to me now. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. But what Esau did was quite wrong, as we see when the story unfolds, he's gonna regret his decision so much. There is a part in the story later where he screams in pain about how stupid it was what happened, because of some food on a plate, he altered his entire future, his entire fate. He gave away so much for this one plate of food. And the Bible speaks about bad decisions that people sometimes do, but then there is something else the Bible talks about, and that's not just a bad decision like this, but it is that there's things that are morally wrong, that like God has given to Esau this birthright, and he just neglects or despises the good thing that God has given to him. And we don't like the word sin. We don't like so much to think about what is morally good or morally bad to do. Especially in the last few decades, it wasn't something that our society thought much about. But in recent years, it came back, like with there are more and more things where the society says this is very bad if you do that, and you have to feel ashamed if you do it this way. And the problem isn't that you have to feel ashamed. The question is much more, what is the right thing to do? What is the thing to strive for in life? Like, how can I conduct my heart? How can I have a heart that does the right things? And how can I know which are right things to do and which are things I should avoid? And there's this thought in the Bible that God is telling us what is good and what isn't good. And it's one thing to do what is good because God is saying it is good, but also it's just the wise thing to do. It's not so much this is the thing you have to do and otherwise you are condemned and you're evil, but it's much more if you go this way, it's gonna end well. It's gonna end well with you and with the people that are around you. So there is so much gain in trusting God when he is talking about things that are good and when he's talking about things that aren't good. But there is another way to think about it. You can essentially think about your future self. And there is this thought that you can alter the fate for your future self with decisions you do right now. You can essentially bargain with your future self. You can tell your future self, okay, I'm not gonna eat too much today because then my future self will be in good health and in good shape. And you will take a sacrifice now because you don't eat as much as you would like. But you're gonna get a reward for it in the future, a reward for your future self. And it's a very good bargain, mostly. So, or think about playing guitar. If you tell yourself now that you're gonna invest half an hour every day to play the guitar and learn to play the guitar, that's a sacrifice that you do today, that you, something that you're paying or giving up for today. But there is this bargain with your future self, because you're saying to your future self, or your future self is saying to you, think about it this way, yeah, your future self is saying to you, hey, give this half an hour today to play the guitar, and then you will have in the future the ability to play an instrument well and enjoy playing the instrument and having fun with yourself and with people that are with you. And it's a very, very good deal to invest this half an hour each day to play the guitar, to reward for the rest of your life the ability to play guitar. And you know, we don't like to talk about sin and morally bad stuff, but the idea is essentially all the things that we mark as sinful, or that God marks as sinful, things that we mark as bad, and these are things that aren't a good bargain for your future self. Now Esau, he gave away his future for a plate of food. And it's actually no coincidence that this story has to do with food. If you know the story of Adam and Eve, for example, at the very beginning of the Bible, it was also about food, the apple on the tree. And if you know how Jesus started in his ministry at the beginning when he was baptized and the Holy Spirit came visibly like a dove on him, and then he was led into the desert and he wasn't eating for 40 days in the desert. He wasn't eating there for 40 days. And you see, it was also about food or not food. And the devil came to tempt him. If you go into the Old Testament, into the sacrifices in the temple, it's all about food, because food is saying something about the way humans are. It's not just the bad. You see, the last thing Jesus did, the last thing he shared with his disciple, was that he gave him the Last Supper, the bread and the wine, a thing that is marking the church until today. Or if you go to the last book of the Bible, then it's written about the end of time, when there is a wedding feast, and it's a feast. There is food. So it's no coincidence that the Bible is so much about food, and that this story is about food, and that the reason behind this theme that goes through the entire Bible is it describes something about human nature, about something about how people function, how they are. People have an appetite, and not just for food, but for so much more things. There's an appetite where you want to have it, and you want to have enough, or you want to enjoy it. There is like this appetite for like messages. It's this good feelings, or sometimes you're taking your phone and you want new messages from people, or you want to have this appetite for videos or short videos. And there's this appetite of things that you want to buy, or this appetite for sexuality or pornography, or this appetite to eat sweet stuff, or to get attention, or this appetite for social media. There are people that have this appetite for power, that they want to have power and they want to have more power. And there's other people that have this appetite for just laying around, and your body wants to have this laying around and just doing nothing. And it's just a thing about humans that they have an appetite, and that they are driven by appetites. And there are two ways of looking at that. The one way is saying, and that's something we hear a lot, is you're gonna be happy if you can satisfy as much as possible from your appetite. You're gonna be happy if you can watch the videos, if you can enjoy buying things, if you can enjoy having as much sex as possible. You're gonna be happy if you satisfy your appetite for food and for little adventures and for going with people, whatever. And you know, life is about fulfilling your appetites. Life is about enjoying the things. This is what life is about. You're gonna be happy if you satisfy your appetites. You know, maybe I didn't articulate this very convincing, but if you look closely at how people function and how the world is made, or how advertisement is made, or everything, there's this thought throughout our society that you have to fulfill your appetites, and this is a way to happiness. But then there is a second way of looking at it, and that is to say, you are going to be happy if you can control your appetite. If you can stop eating at the right moment, then you have much more happiness. Or if you can control your appetite for sexuality, or if you share that or give it as a gift to your spouse, that is something that gives real joy to you. You know, that's the other way of looking at it. It is saying, no, life isn't about satisfying as most of your appetite as most as possible. No, life is about something else. You're gonna have most of life if you can control your appetite. If you're not a slave of your appetite, but if you can be set free to think about what's around you much more than when you think about all your appetites. And you know, Jesus, he told his disciples in Matthew 16, he says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself or deny his appetites or deny his utmost desires. Let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. So, you know, the way of Jesus, the way of following Jesus is saying no to many of our appetites. It is to follow Jesus isn't compatible with a lifestyle that says, I want to fulfill as much as possible of my appetites. It's just not compatible. There are two different ways. And one way is not the way of Jesus. It's not the way Jesus wants his disciples to be or to live. So let's go back to the story of Esau and Jacob, or Jacob and Esau. Esau, he did a very bad deal for himself, for his future self. And Jacob, he was in that story very mean, as we have seen. And there's a thing about God we need to know. That's, he isn't ignoring the stuff that is happening. Even though he, like in the story, you don't see God doing anything. He's just observing the situation, or letting the people do what they want to do, because God respects so much of what we do. But nevertheless, there is this thought in the Bible that God gets angry at Jacob because he was unfair to Esau. And God wasn't just ignoring it and saying, Jacob, he was taking advantage of Esau's weakness, but anyway, let's do him. No, he was saying, this is so wrong to Esau that he was taken advantage of in this situation. But still, God doesn't intervene because he lets these two men have their way, their freedom, and he wants them to mature through things like this. But nevertheless, God doesn't ignore it. And there's this thought in the Bible that there's something like a bowl in God's hand. And the things that need to be dealt with to make things right, and the things that are wrong, and you can't just ignore them, that they are like stored up in this bowl. And one day God will make things right for Esau that was taken advantage of. And there is this metaphor in the Bible, this image that God has like a cup, and he is waiting with judging the things that are bad, but he's putting these things in this cup, and he's having this cup or this bowl, and one day he will make justice, one day he will make everything right, and that's when he takes up this bowl where everything that has caused pain or that was sinful is in there and needs to be dealt with to make things right again on our planet and in our lives and in everything. Now this thought that there is this bowl or this cup is very comforting and unsettling at once. You see, it's comforting because, you know, when people have wronged you, when people have been very, very mean to you, or if they did things that destroyed your life or caused so much harm, then God isn't just ignoring it. One day, he's gonna make it right. You don't have to arrange yourself. There is a thought in the Bible that's very difficult to grasp, but very important. We're going to have a look at this thought right now. And this thought is that the biggest problem of humanity isn't that people have war with each other, or that there is climate change, or that people do stupid stuff when they're hangry, or that they are mean and take advantage of people when they are in a weaker position. The biggest problem of humanity isn't that, but the biggest problem of humanity is actually that they're cut off from God because they lost their birthright to be a child of God. And like Esau, he lost his birthright for a plate of food. And this is a problem we all face as a human. We lost our birthright because our heart is sinful, because of that, we as humanity aren't close to God. And that is actually the biggest problem of humanity, because this is the underlying reason all the other bad stuff is happening. You know, that's a key thought in the Bible, and it's hard or difficult to grasp. It seems maybe at times it doesn't seem like an appealing thought, but it's still the thought that goes through the entire Bible and is so important to grasp, is that our biggest problem is that we are no longer connected with God, that we aren't connected with God. We have lost our birthright, like Esau has lost his birthright for a plate of food. You know, but many years forward, a second figure like Esau appears in the Bible. There's a second person that is like Esau, and it's no coincidence. And it is, as you've probably guessed, it is Jesus. Jesus is like a second Esau. Jesus, as well as Esau, was the firstborn. Jesus was before all men and all earth, all humanity was created. And so he was the firstborn. And he also gave away his birthright. When Jesus came to earth to be a human, he gave away his birthright. And like Esau, Jesus as well was very, very hungry at one point. He was for 40 days in the desert, and he was very, very hungry like Esau. And like Esau, he was actually red and rough at one point, and that is a connection between these two stories, the story of Jesus and the story of Esau, that Esau was red and rough when he was born because of all the hair he had on his body, and he took this bowl of red stuff, he ate this bowl, this red bowl, and it's like Jesus on the cross. He was red and rough because he was whipped, and he took the bowl of judgment. Jesus took the bowl of judgment on him. This cup, this red cup of judgment, this red cup of all the things people have ever done wrong, and that God had to deal with, that all this injustice that was in that cup, and that God had, Jesus took it on him. This red cup, he took it on him. And Jesus, he took this red cup of judgment, the red bowl of wrath from God against all that was wrong. He took it on himself. So he ate it that we didn't or don't have to eat it, that we don't have to take it. Jesus ate this, took this bowl, this red bowl, this red cup, to give us a birthright that we couldn't have done, that we couldn't have get on ourselves. So Jesus took this cup to make us, so that we could become children of God. So Jesus gave up his birthright to give us a new birthright to be children of God. Jesus became a second Esau, and he gave away his birthright, and he took the cup, but not because he was careless, but because he cared so much for us. Jesus became a second Esau to make everything right that Esau and all humanity did wrong. He became the second one to make right what was done wrong before. Jesus ate and drank the bowl of judgment so that we don't have to. And he got up and he rose and went his way. And he's taking us with him. He's having us with him now. As he left the grave as a new man, a man that has done right what all the others couldn't have done right. He left the grave as a man that was had a new life to give us a new life. A life we don't have, a life in which we don't have to eat this bowl of judgment, and a life where we get the birthright to be with God, to be one of God's children that we couldn't have had on our own. If you can see, if you can grasp that your biggest problem is that you're disconnected from God, if you can see that this is actually the biggest problem that you have ever faced to face in your life. But if you can see at the same time that the greatest gift for you is that Jesus took all your sin and he set you free, then you are with Jesus. Then you can be reconnected, reconciled with him, to go with him, to be with him. You know, Jesus was the Esau that Esau could never have been. And Jesus is in your life the one that you could not have been. And this sets you free. This sets you free to no longer be a slave of your sin, a slave of your sinful nature. It sets you free because you're reconnected with God. And I invite you to take a moment to consider some of the aspects of this story. I don't know how well this sermon expressed what Jesus did and how he was the second Esau, how he made right what Esau couldn't have made right, how Jesus made right what all of humanity didn't. I don't know how much you could see that, but I invite you to just take a moment and go again through the story and through the different aspects and see how what Jesus did sets you to free, and maybe express in a quiet prayer how beautiful Jesus appears to you in that story.